video, so many, you see, observe, do observe all these ceremonies, rituals, we perform rituals, read prayer, scriptures, say prayers. What is this for? This is only to create interest in you in a way to just have some love for God. If you say all these prayers and not a single tear drops sheds from your tears in sweet remembrance of the Lord, well, such like practices will carry you nowhere. It is just like a gymnastics that you do with no results. So, way back to God is love, you see. So, love all. Love and all things shall be added unto you. In the sight of St. John, you see, when he was old enough, he could not walk freely. He used to walk with a stick in hand, by the sport of a stick in hand. From school, managers that went off invited him to give a talk to the children in the school. He came up, head down, he was very old, you see. He just raised up head and said, "Boys, love one another." Then he sat down again, he raised his hands and said, "Boys, love one another." Again, third time he raised his head and again repeated the same thing, "Boys, love one another." Then he kept quiet. The secretary in charge, after waiting for a few minutes, then he, perhaps he was considering that further talk will be given. So when St. John did not speak, he simply asked his audience, "Have you nothing more to say?" He said, "Well, I have nothing more to say. That is all I have to say, love one another. Love and all things shall be added to you." Sometimes on account of position we hold, sometimes on account of having wealth, even having wealth and possessions. The life does not consist in possessions and wealth, you see, as I justified before. Life consists in contacting your conscious self with the all consciousness of it. He said, "Well, love and all things can be added to you." You know, once Christ said, "Well, look here, I give you a new commandment." What? Love one another. What for? So that the people may know that you are coming to me. So these are the qualifications of selfless service, you see. Selfless service also in two ways, you see, one physically, when another man is sick, he wants your attendance, do it. Selfless. Somebody else needs you for some public service, then do it for him. That's the first part of the selfless service that you can perform, you see, by a physical body. And the other is financially. Yes? Financially, just earn money with the hard dint, you see, of brow, sweat of brow. Honesty, that's the first thing. And then keep up, maintain your bodies, maintain your families, and out of that, just reserve something, give away something for sharing others who are needy, who are just unclothed, those who have got nothing to eat, and also for the purpose of the public service, and especially where the people can have spiritual uplift. So these are the qualifications of a man who would like to see God. I also, I was just advise you, this has been my last talk, that I will also require you, each one of you, to love one another, you see. If you love anybody, first of all, love God. God resides in every heart. Naturally, you have to love all humanity. When you love all humanity, are you going to rob anybody or kill anybody or steal anything from the other one? Not really. These are the two commandments on which all other commandments hang on, you see. The work of all prophets hang on, I tell you. When you are prepared that way, you are a fit person to see God. That message at whose feet? First of all, I told you have to come to some master who has himself seen God. First thing, he will be able to show you also. If he has not seen himself, how can he show you? The question was asked from Guru Nanak when there was a God. He said, yes, behold, God is seen everywhere. I see God everywhere. How to see? He said, those eyes are different. Eyes are not of flesh and bone, but different with which we can see God. And it is which are those eyes? That is the inner eye or the single eye, what Christ speaks of. The light of the body is the eye. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. That is the eye, with the neat band, but now closed. When that inner eye is open, with that you will see the light of God within you. Definition number two, Sikh, as given by the tenth guru of the Sikhs is, who sees the full effulgent light of God within, only he is a pure Sikh, pure heart. Mohammedans also say the same thing. Those who go up the mountain of Tur, that is, rises above the body and sees the light of God, he is a true Mohammedan. And as regards the Christian, it is also said, he is only the true Christian who sees the light of God. Hindus also define the same. So true Christianity, true Sikhism, true Hinduism and true Mohammedanism lies in what? In seeing God, the light of God, which is within you. You see? For that is those men, those masters, who teachers, name them by any name you like, those who have analyzed themselves from the body, and known own self first, and their inner eye is open to see the light of God, you see, only, and they are competent to give you first an experience, how little it may be, there's no question of quantum, you see. At the feet of such a master, you will also be able to see God and to hear the voice of God. So this is a question before us. How can we see God? I'll just give you a digest of a hymn from the fifth guru of the sixth, you see, in which he deals with this subject, you see. What does he say? He says, well, how can we see God, you see? That's a question each, that's a common question before us all. The elementary thing, you see, required the qualification I've just given you. With having that qualification, he comes up to somebody who is on the way, he is simply telling you, all right, how to see God, that is your question. And the first and foremost thing is, What? He says, you must meet such a person who has transcended the physical, astral and mental planes, causal planes, known himself and contacted God, you see, and risen into him. Or say, who has become the mouthpiece of God, I think. Mouthpiece of God. Who speaks as inspired by God. Only such a man will be able to give you the first experience. If you sit at the feet of such a person who has seen God, only then you will be able to see God. This is what Christ also said, you see. He said, God knows the Son, and Son knows the Father. And others whom the Son of Man reveals. The similar thing has been given by the third Guru of the sixth, Guru Amar Das. He says, it is a fundamental rule that without sitting at the feet of a true master, God has made it a fundamental rule that whoever sits at the feet of a true master, only he will come up to me. You see, the same parallel thought, you see, given out by masters in their own language at different times when they visit the earth. So their first qualification is to sit at the feet of a practical master, I would say now. And this is almost said by almost all saints, you see. Maulana Rum, a Mohammedan saint, says, well, look here, if you want to go to a pilgrimage, place of pilgrimage, just take somebody who has already has been to this, that place of pilgrimage. Because he knows the way, he has been there, he knows all the ways and other things, how to stay on the way, how we will reach there, what are the means which will help us to reach there. And it is better always to just find out somebody who has seen that place. Then who he should be? To what religion he should belong, he said. No matter, he may be a Hindu, he's a Mohammedan saint. He may be a Hindu. He may be a Turk. He may belong to any social religion, that makes no matter. He must be one who has visited the place of pilgrimage. Those who have seen her, those who have seen God, take him along with you. For instance, the man has to go to a foreign land. What does he do? He looks up directories, finds out how I will go, how I will just have to go to some foreign land, and how I will take a ticket, which ship I should go on, you see, and where that will land, and that place where might be I do not know the language of that place, what will be intermediary, you see, for interpretation. And if I go at all to that place, where should I live? I've got no acquaintance there. For this purpose, you look up directly. In the meantime, when you are searching for that thing, a man comes up and says, all right, you are going to such and such foreign country, then just a man has come back from that very country. What will he do? That is, he will close the directory all at once and run up to the man who is coming from that country. He did that. That's the bad nature. When he goes to him, he asks him questions, well, look here, what is the way and how will we go? He has seen, he will say. That's the difference, you see. The man who has seen, you see, is very definite about things. He's got weight in his words. He's out of full conviction he speaks. No doubt, no ray of uncertainty in his talk, is it? That is, naturally that appeals to the man who goes to him. And by the way, he mentions all that I am again going to that country next week. How do you find yourself there? All three, you need no directives now, because the man who has been to that place is just going along with you. Similarly, this way, please. We are now identified with the body. So much so that we cannot differentiate. We have to leave the body someday. There are macrocosm is in the microcosm. You just leave the body and there are further planes, astrocosm, and beyond, you see. You have traversed all these things, go reach your true home, you see. That is who has traversed these things. Has been to this, he goes over there daily. If you come across such a man, actually you feel very happy. Now ABC, all the teachings of such a master who has gone beyond, he does not touch your social religion, I say. He says, remain where you are. They say always, give things give to Caesar, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and render to God the things that are of God's. He simply said, he does not touch the outer aspects of your religion. He comes, simply touches who you are, what you are, how can you transcend the body, leave the physical plane, transcend into the beyond and ultimately reach your true home. How to open the inner eye and see the light of God. Kingdom of God is within you, he says. So, Guru Arjuna says, if you are hard up to fulfill the highest aim of your life of seeing God, first requirement is to just sit at the feet of somebody who has seen God. Mere intellectual man will not be able to give you that experience. Of course, he will give you all intellectual information. When you want to become a doctor, you see, you must sit at the feet of some doctor, you see. He can make you a doctor. Just by anatomy, by operations, he's seen how the system is working and this and that. So doctors work wonders by operations. They take off everything else and still the man is alive, you see. If you just go only to a druggist, could you become a doctor? He'll of course give you so many recipes and prescriptions. Give a various doctor for a certain disease, he will be able to give you all that. But this is such and such is the prescription, such and such like that. But he cannot make you a doctor, you see. Similar this way, this is a question of self-analysis. Man who has analyzed himself from the body, known himself and known God, transcended all these physical causal planes, actual, then in that he transcends the body, when he comes back he works with the body. He has that competency. When you sit at the feet of only such a person, only then you will be able to see that. The man who has simply remembered all the holy scriptures of the world, he might be giving you a very wonderful talk, quoting here and there from Vedas and Shastras and Muhammad and the six scriptures of the Bible, everywhere. First of all, he would not be able to reconcile these things, I tell you. He may be quoting you so many things, but he doesn't know. This is just like a, I tell you, some sandalwood are some very precious and delicious sweets. which are just laden on an ash. That ash is carrying that arm. But he does not eat, does not taste, you see. Similarly, any spoon which is just going into the pudding, sweet puddings or sweet dishes, that does not taste anything. Similarly, the man who is just his brain full of this merchandise of the Holy Scriptures, he has no taste of that. How can you do anything? So first and foremost requirement is to sit at the feet of some practical master who has analyzed himself, whose inner eye is open to see the light of God, and who is competent to give you personal experience thereof. How little is it? This is what if such a master gives you initiation, puts you on the way, only then you will be able to get on otherwise. This is first requirement. Now naturally the question arises, such a master, what will he teach you? Can past masters help us? Are those needed? Well, I say the need of the past masters as well. Why? They had this experience in their lives. They left us their experiences in the form of the Holy Scriptures, which are worth in tons and gold and rubies and emeralds and diamonds. But by reading them, that will create in you an interest to have that life. And that is all. But present day, somebody is also needed who has got that experience in himself, his authentic body, consciousness of the body. His inner eyes open, he sees the light of God. He has those experiences which are given in the Holy Scriptures. Such a present man, living man is required, who is able to give you that experience. He is also needed. Past gurus and masters are needed for the purpose of testimony. Oh, they all say one thing. You see? They speak of the same experience in their own ways, in their own languages. But they are a sealed book, I would say, handed down to us from posterity to posterity, but we have not tasted them. Those things which the scriptures speak of, those are within you. You see? Unless you know how to invert, how to transcend the body, body is the temple of God. Unless you invert and see those things for your own self, you are not convinced, my friend. The saints say, so now you may be reading all the scriptures, you may be hearing even the masters, I would say. You may be intellectually satisfied, but full conviction arises only when you see the things for your own self. First you can take up the thing as an experimental deya. But when you are made to sit and given the first experience, naturally you are convinced that there is a way up. So the first and foremost requirement is to meet or to sit at the feet of some master who is competent to give you that experience. And he has that experience himself too. This is the first thing, you see. If such a man puts you on the way back to God, you will be on the way and you will be having your experiences. This is a fundamental truth. Then such a man, what does he teach? That's the question arises. What would he say? They are teachers and teachers. They are teachers of the social religions. They will tell you how to live in a certain social religion. how to perform certain rites and ceremonies. They have just advised you to read certain scriptures. Just carry on the elementary things. It's elementary. And if such masters also teach us, just do the duty in a real sense, I would say, there will be unity between man and man. But unfortunately, no one knows what happens. They simply say that, look here, who belongs to this particular social religion, only he will be saved, and no other. Well, God made man, excuse me. Man is in soul body. God did not stamp any body with it, whether he is a Christian or a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Sikh. Then you transcend the body, who you are, what you are. The question I put to my master, well, who you are, he simply said, well, look, yes, if God is a Hindu, I'm a Hindu, if he's a Christian, I'm a Christian, you see. If he's a Mohammedan, I'm a Mohammedan. Religion of the soul is of the same as of God, you see. God is all consciousness, and our souls are also conscious beings, conscious entities. Man is social, and it is natural to live in some social body. That you mean, by changing one social body or the other, cannot ensure that you will be saved. You will have to qualify yourself for the way back to God. And further, to sit at the feet of somebody who has just known himself and known God. Call him by any name you like. Now, when you go to such a man, what does he say? He doesn't touch your outer form, I tell you. He says, remain where you are. Now, the present teachers of the social religion, what they say, well, okay, if you have this social body, well, you are saved. You believe in such a thing, that will go. No. Excuse me if I say, the Christians say that who has God taken up the form of Christianity, only they will be saved. And the Sikhs say that only those who are in the Sikh form and believing in the Sikhs, they will be saved. Mohammedans say, well, who do not believe in the Quran, you see, are the Prophet Muhammad, they will all go to heaven. So who is true then? Either all are wrong, you see? Well, of course, there are two sides of the religion. One the outer objective side, the other the inner side. Objective side, purpose of the objective side is to prepare the ground. That will do the work of a midwife, helping in bringing out children. But a midwife does not give birth to a child, but that is going back. The health effect, that is a necessity. To remain in some social religion is a blessing. But when you come to such a master with that qualification I just give you, the subjective side of the teaching, esoteric teaching, you know, what he would say, he says, well, look here, you're out of finding God. Where to find him? See, the men of the social religion, what they advise, all right, read this scripture, you will find God. Attend that particular temple or mosque or church daily, you will find God. Just visit such and such place of pilgrimage, you will find God. This generally, this social religion teachers say, but the man of this type, who has known God, what does he say? He says, well, if you want to see God, go visit you. Kingdom of God is visit you. Kingdom of God cannot be had by observance, you see, but by inversion, I would say. So for that purpose, the kingdom of God is within you, not outside. Unless you transcend the body consciousness, you will not have access into it.
Good morning and welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listened to was the first 30 minutes of Master's farewell talk given in Beaumont, California on August 1, 1955. Our reader today is Sheila Gilmore.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be reading two things today. The first one is a talk that just came from the selections from Satsandish this week. It's called God Has Entered My House, which was a Darshan talk given by Master Kirpal in Rajpur and was published in the May 1973 edition of Satsandish. So Master begins. This was a hymn from Kabir, who appreciates his own good luck. By God's grace, the word made flesh has entered my house, and it is fortunate I am that the manifested God in man has come in. Now, what should I do? He has given me a contact with that God within me. So go on. No moment should be lost but to be with that power. The result is, I am quiet, sitting in that bliss, at peace. Mind has found no place in me to rise into ripples now. Quiet, calm, serene. Oh, mind, go on with this thing you have got by the grace of God who has appeared in man body and entered your house. So fortunate I am, you see. The result is now I have escaped the wheel of life. Birth and death. I am at home with God. Thank you, God, Kabir says. God himself made flesh, came to me, gave me a contact with him who is already within me. Oh, mind, go on with it now. Don't lose a minute without remaining in contact with that. That is what the hymn says. Out of thousands, millions, trillions of people, how many people get the contact? They are engaged mostly in the outward ways of worship, those methods which are performed with the help of hands or outgoing faculties or intellect. Who can give us that contact except the God in man, that God which is manifest in the man body? Greatly fortunate, O mind, that God in man has entered my house. This man body, too, really is a house we live in, an outside house. I remember when our master went to Lahore. He sat in a room and gave instructions to someone there. When he went back, I locked it. Nobody entered. Whenever you came into that room, the sweet music was heard. So places are blessed by such personalities. The atmosphere is charged. Greatly fortunate we are that such a person has entered our house. So that is our lesson, thanking God, thanking our own destiny, our own God, and God in man. Let no moment pass without remembrance, constant remembrance. The lower mind does not like to withdraw from outside. At times, for an hour or two, we try to go in, but it does not remain inside. But once we get that bliss, that bliss inside, which is stronger, more attractive, more intoxicating, we'll never dare to lose contact with that power. Outside things are attractive to us, but are those things really attractive? We are conscious beings. A drop of the ocean of all consciousness, which is an ocean of intoxication. These outside things are all material things. When you are wholly engrossed, imbued with outer things, you have that bliss, a little contact with your own intoxication within, like a dog who eats bones. There is no taste in the bones. but his own blood goes out and he drinks that blood, which provides the taste. So we are bliss. We are a drop of intoxication. When you are imbued with something else, for that moment, so long as you are engaged there, there is some bliss. But it is really no bliss. When our soul, which is a drop of the ocean of all consciousness, comes in contact with all consciousness, it gets more bliss, the most bliss. So really, we are of the same essence as that of God. He is eternal. So God is all wisdom. He is all bliss, joy, happiness. We all want happiness. Pity we seek it amiss. It is within our own selves. And by coming in contact with that higher consciousness, you will become more happy. We have that reflection of our own peace and happiness in outer things by engaging in them. We are fortunate we have someone who gives us a clue to that. Not a clue, but a demonstration of that for a while. We should develop that from day to day. Then we will say, like Kabir, I am greatly fortunate that I have met with the Master who came and entered my outer house, my inner house too. So mind, now enjoy that bliss. Never lose a moment of it. Be thankful. Have the real right perspective as the matter stands. By concentration only can you feel that bliss. You come in contact with the higher consciousness, more bliss. If you're engaged in the outer things, then also you have some bliss, but that is only temporary for a while, a drop. Is that not true? Does this not appeal to you? All masters bring this to the world, you see. Shamas Tabrez, a great saint of Persia, says, "Don't look to my outer dress. I appear to be living in rags. Look within me to see who I am." People asked Shamas Tabrez, "Why have you come here?" He said, "I could not refuse. I have been sent. Look within me. I am the King of Kings." These are his words. I am quoting you. "What have you brought?" "I have brought the very strong whiskey of heaven to distribute to the world. That is why I have come to you." So all masters say the same thing in their own language. They bring something. What did Christ say? "I am the bread of life, which has come down from heaven. Whosoever partakes of it shall have everlasting life." Both express themselves in different words, but they say the same thing. Fortunate those who get a contact and, like Kabir, say, "Be thankful to the God in man." We fritter away all this valuable life in trifling things. Our master used to class people, disciples. He would say that the satsangis are all there, but there are some homey satsangis, those who are at home with the master. They were more dear to him than anybody else in the world. You remember that Christ was once sitting with a good number of people, and he was told that his mother and brethren had come and said, "Who is my mother? Who are my brethren?" "Those who do the will of God." Masters have that angle of vision. All the four sons of the 10th guru were martyred. There were so many people sitting by him. His wife came up and asked him, "Where are my children? I have sacrificed them for all these children of mine." You do not know how dear you are to the Master. So those who are obeying, living up to what he says, forget all relations. It is he who binds our inner relation, which can never be broken, even after death. Here all issues are paid off, give and take. That's all. Each one has to go his own way. but the inner relation can never be broken even after death, even after leaving the body. Our master used to give an example of people crossing a river. The sailor first takes one load, then another lot, then a third lot. Then those whom masters have initiated are taken one by one. All will go, some before, some after, but on the other side of the world you will all meet. Are these things in books? Books cannot explain everything. We are looked after by the shepherd. People asked Christ, "Why have you come here?" He answered, "I have lost my sheep." When I was leaving by plane for the West, people gathered together and asked me why I was going. "I'm going to find all my brothers there." We do not realize what a blessing we have. Make the best use of it. God made flesh has come, has entered my house and given me a contact. Oh, mind, don't rest for a moment. And that's the main object of man's life. In this human body, you can go back to your home and in no other. You are fortunate you have the human body. What you can do here in a short time cannot be done in the other world, the higher planes, in 10 times as long. Every day, every hour, every minute brings us closer to the end of the human body. So hurry up. Repose. Just go into the lap of the mother. Nothing further to be done. That is the result of effort, but effortless effort. There are two mottos in the world. First, God helps those who help themselves, but also God helps those who do not help themselves. Help yourself so much that you forget yourself in that effort. So go back, recede, leave off thinking. If the mind, outgoing faculties, and intellect stand still, that very silence transfers into light, then into sound. So it is comparatively easier if you can repose, having faith in the mother. You cannot repose unless you have full confidence in the mother. A child can never dream that a lion would come and eat him up. He will run to the mother, and the mother would rather be eaten by the lion than let the child be. Such love she has for the child. So how fortunate we are, you see. Here is the open secret I have spoken to you from a common sense level. So what remains now? Don't be led away by the daily doings. Life is a series of interruptions, a matter of give and take, reactions of the past. Nobody can even dream that anything goes according to his will and pleasure. With all that, these are give and take passing phases. Stick to what you have been given. That will prove a sheet anchor. Remain air conditioned, not to be affected by the outside atmosphere, cold or heat, hurricanes or anything. Where is that? That is in your own self. So recede. You will feel it. Don't allow any waves coming from the outside to enter through the outgoing faculties. Shut yourself in the closet, as Christ said, the closet of your body. What does meditation mean? When you enter within, you will find He is there, quite cut off from the outside. This is something given to you practically. You are to develop it by regular practice, weeding out all outer attachments in one way or another. When a child is there trying to walk here and there, and the mother is pleased to see first the child crawling, then walking, then running, Master is pleased to see his children going along. He does not compare the man running with the child hopping along. He appreciates that hopping too. Similar to the mother, is it not? The child is very dear to the mother, is he not? The child running as well as the child hopping. So let us be thankful. That's all I can say. Kabir has a good lesson to give us. All right, that's the end of that talk. God has entered my house. I'm moving on to the book Nam, or Word, the section on Shabad, and I'm starting a little bit into that section on page 174 in my book. The early morning hours are best suited for practice of the sound principle, for the mind is yet fresh out of sleep and has not yet wandered into the daily routine of the physical life. Guru Nanak said, "In the early morning hours, commune with the Word, leaving aside all attachments. Nanak would like to be the slave of his slave who engaged in the Word and won what is lost to the world. At the ambrosial hour of the early dawn, be ye in communion with the divine Word and meditate on his glory." Shabad brings in untold blessings. It is the powerhouse of all energy or force in any form, from pranas down to electricity and magnetism. Every form of life is the manifestation of Shabad. All that is of Shabad, and nothing is that is not of Shabad. Life current pulsating in and out of space. Those who commune with Shabad and live in and by Shabad are verily the children of the Supreme One, the life of life and the light of light. Shabad is the very bread of life which comes down from heaven for all those who hunger after righteousness, and the very water of life for those who thirst after self-knowledge and God-knowledge. True love, wisdom, and power are the greatest gifts that one gets by basking in the sunshine of heaven's light. Mind grows docile and is purified of the lusts of the flesh. There is no remedy to control the oscillations of the ever-restless mind. One may resort to all the known methods, to wit, penances and austerities, rites and rituals, fasts and vigils, pilgrimages and circumambulations, purificatory baths in the holy rivers, charitable and philanthropic acts, but cannot thereby achieve inner peace. On the contrary, all these help in developing the egotistic instinct, which is the root cause of all evil. Sage Vasishtha, while teaching Rama, told him that he could for a moment believe that one had lifted the mighty Himalayas or had drunk the oceanic waters to the lees, but the sage would never believe it if anyone were to say that he had subdued the mind. But by listening to the sound current, one is rid of all karmic impressions of the past. The contact with the Shabad acts as a spark of fire that burns down all impurities of the mind, as a heap of hay is burnt down to ashes in an instant. The storehouse of unfructified karmas is blown off like a powder magazine, and once released of this gigantic load, the mind and soul get attuned with the heavenly music, lost to the world around like a moth before a candle. Mind runs after pleasurable sensations, most of which fall into two groups: forms and patterns on the one hand, and sweet symphonies of sound on the other. The Shabad too has both these characteristics, the heavenly melody and the divine light. And once that sound or light principle becomes manifest, mind is paralyzed. Losing all faith in the transitory charms of the world that gradually lose their glamour and grow dull, insipid, and lifeless. With a draught of the water of life, the mind grows still, for there is no other remedy to still it but that of communing with the sound current. Guru Nanak said, "Without the word of the master, the mind remains restless. Our restless mind becomes steady when engrossed in the Shabad. And this is the highest worship and the greatest virtue. By practice of the Shabad, ripples cease to float on the lake of the mind. Guru Amar Das said, all the oscillations of the mind cease with the practice of Shabad and it gets pacified of itself. Guru Nanak said, mind keeps running in space, high and low, so long as it does not come in contact with the Shabad. Shabad is sharper than a two-edged razor and cuts asunder all attachments of the world, conquers the five passions, and frees one of bondage from all that one holds dear. And the spirit, when freed, flies unfettered toward her native home in heaven. Kabir said, being rid of the five deadly sins, one remains engrossed in the Lord. Shabad is the remedy for egotism from which all the world suffers. Guru Amar Das said, egotism is the greatest ill oppressing all. Without Shabad, one cannot get rid of this malady. Egotism is an age-old disease, but it can be remedied by the practice of the Master's word. Guru Nanak said, egotism is an age-old disease, and its remedy, too, lies within. Should the Lord so favor, one takes to the practice of the Master's word. Guru Amar Das said, the poison of egotism is rendered ineffective by the Shabad of the Master. And another one, Guru Nanak said, O Nanak, Shabad burns away egotism. Shams Tabriz also prescribes medicine of Shabad to cure one of his egotism. Quote, when thou shalt hear the trumpet blast, thou shalt be rid of all pride and passions. When the harmonious sound shall fall on thy ears, thou shalt be freed from the life of the senses. Shabad brings in inner peace and satiety. Everyone is in a desperate search for peaceful rest and repose, but does not get it. All the comforts of the flesh are but pleasures of an evanescent nature, floating like clouds in the sky. The sensations, which seem pleasurable for a while, are the result of our own fixity of attention, and apart from that, have no real and independent existence. Our case is like that of a dog while munching a dry bone, hurts his mouth, and his own blood trickles down his palate to his tongue, giving him relish, and he is deluded into the belief that all this is from the dry bone. Spirit or soul is a conscious entity. It cannot possibly derive or get any happiness from inert, material, and lifeless things. That is, things in which the life principle is in a dormant or a latent state. It is only from the fount of higher consciousness that the spirit can get her food and sustenance. The sound current, which the master makes audible, is an active life principle. It's a stream of life, and contact and communion with it gives the soul real happiness and bliss. Guru Amar Das said, "The practice of the Master's word grants immunity from all ailments, and the devotee of the Master is freed from all sufferings." Shabad has an exhilarating and exalting influence which charms the body and mind, both of which acquire ineffable serenity. Guru Ram Dass said, "The fires of lusts play havoc within, but the Master lets in a stream of refreshing music, hearing which the body and the mind feel blessed and are saved from all maladies." Guru Nanak said, "The Master's word is an ocean of serenity. It is the path of salvation and destroys all egotism." When the soul contacts Shabad, it gets saturated in the power of God and feels truly blessed. Guru Nanak said, "The contact of Shabad with soul produces joy supreme, and dip in the power of God gives true happiness." Guru Ram Dass said, "Day and night an unceasing bliss descends when one remains devoted to the great word." Guru Arjan said, "The word of the Master is a source of great happiness. Blessed indeed is the bride soul that lives saturated with love of the Beloved." In the six scriptures, one reads of innumerable benefits that accrue from Shabbat. Shabbat kills root and branch, all longings and desires, mental vibrations, and subtle attachments. Guru Nanak said, "Shabbat extinguishes the fires of desires and quietly drives away all delusions. Shabbat singes all aspirations and cravings, and one remains attuned with the Lord." Guru Amar Das said, "Shabbat burns down all material longings and attachments. The body and the mind live in eternal peace and in love of the Master." When once the life stream becomes audible, one never feels lonely, for he hears its reverberations wherever he may be, at home or abroad. The voice of God keeps reminding him of the true home of his Father. The practice of the sound principle rids one of all troubles and afflictions, the five deadly passions, the lust of the flesh and of the mind, leaving the soul in pristine transparency, detached from all that is of the world and worldly. Shabbat is the supporting staff both in the journey of this life and the life hereafter. With the experience of transcendence beyond the confines of the body, one becomes fearless of death. And when the allotted span of worldly existence comes to an end, he throws off once and for all the mortal coils of the flesh as easily and happily as one does his old and worn-out garments, and is freed from the cycle of births and deaths, and goes openly and honorably to his home in heaven. The practice of and communion with the Word brings in heaven's light, and one feels divinely blessed. It gives intuitive knowledge of the self and God, and one experiences within himself the integral realization of the soul as one common life principle extending everywhere, in and around him, without any barriers and limitations of time and space. For all life is one from eternity to eternity, irrespective of the many forms and patterns through which it may manifest. The moment one rises into the timeless, he himself becomes timeless. This, in fact, is true meditation and true devotion, leading to the true love of God and his creation, his own self expanding and coinciding with that of his Creator. This is Jivan Mukti, or salvation while living in the world. Like a lotus flower above and aloft in the muddy pool in which it stands, unaffected by the dirt or squalor of the water below. Woe betide those who do not get contact with Shabbat, for they ever remain between the millstones of God's negative power and endlessly go up and down in the giant wheel of creation, according to the merit and demerit of their karmas, whatever they be. Born in the gyres, they come and go in the gyres with no way to escape until they contact some master of the word who may lead them to the path of the word, the way out, and bring about their salvation. The waters of life lie hidden in the deepest depths of the soul, and the way thereto lies in utter silence through the word. Living in the hustle and bustle of life, if we try for it at all, we seek it, like other things, outside us and miserably fail in the endeavor. But those who search for it the right way and are put on the path by some competent word incarnate may drink of this elixir and taste of this manna and gain immortality. All right, I'm going to stop there. The first reading was a talk by Master, which appeared in the May 1973 Sat Sandesh called God Has Entered My House. And the second reading came from Nam, or Word, in the section about Shabbat. Thank you, and I thank our Master so much.
Thank you, Sheila, for reading Master's gracious words. There were 84 participants at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for your loving guidance and blessings.
If you have been just given this man body, by the grace of God, to enable you to go back to your home, but remain here, pay off your debts, give and takes, you see, and find your way back to God.